service this morning here at this building. It's not a new building. It's not a new sanctuary. It's been revamped and restored, I guess you could call it. I love the colors. I love the carpeting. It's just great. I like the stage. Did you notice the sound booth? Our sound people love that too. It's the cleanest it's ever been back there, by the way. There's just stuff all over the place normally. But this is a place of worship. That's kind of what we've been emphasizing the last few minutes. But even more than that, a church is more than just a place of worship. It's a place of preaching. It's a place of teaching. But I want to talk about this building, this room, this place, in terms that maybe we don't often think of as far as what a church is and what a church does. We're going to look at a thing called a city of refuge. City of refuge is an Old Testament command that God gave to the nation of Israel, that they were to build cities where people could go for refuge. Now, maybe it's a little bit easier to think of it in terms of a sea captain. In the ancient days, not many people would cross great bodies of water to get where they were going. Even in the Mediterranean, the ships would hug the shoreline because they needed to be able to get into a safe harbor if a storm came up. And if they're caught out on the open sea with no place to go, all they can do is ride it out and hope that they're not utterly destroyed by the winds and the waves. And so if you look at Paul's writings in the New Testament, you'll notice that they went from seaport to seaport to seaport, because a good captain knew that it was better to be safe than fast. If it took a great amount of courage to cross great bodies of water without knowing where the harbors were, where those safe harbors were, where they could go into in case they encountered a storm. And every ship captain knew that. That's what made the voyages by Columbus and the other discovery people so earth-shakingly brave in their time. Number one, they had no idea where they were going for the most part. They had a kind of an idea. It wasn't like it was totally blind. But they had no real idea of where they were going. And secondly, they didn't know if there was any place they could go if there was a storm. They didn't have any safe harbors to go to. And that was the terrible risk that they were taking. And you all heard stories about great shipwrecks and things like that that happened. Well, in the Old Testament, there's the story of a place of safe harbor for people that were called cities of refuge. In order to understand that, we've got to do a little background information. And in Numbers chapter 1, God orders a census of all of the Israelites of fighting age. He wants them to know, he knew how many there were, but he wanted them to know how great they were, how many of them there were. And so he orders this census of young men that are of fighting age so that they can put an army together, because they're going to possess the promised land and they need to be able to take it for themselves, with God's help, of course. But they needed to do that. But there was an exception to that rule, and it's found in Numbers 1, 47 through 50. It says, "But this total did not include the Levites." Now, who are the Levites? The Levites are the priestly tribe. The Levites are the tribe where all of the priests, all of the people that served in the tabernacle came from. They were all from the tribe of Levi. Now, it's important to understand, an important understanding for us to have, is that in order to be a priest, you couldn't run for office. You couldn't get together and say to your friends and family, "You know what, I think I'd like to be a priest. I think I'll run for that office," because the only way you could be a priest is to be born into that tribe of priests. Now, that meant that the qualification for being a priest was you had to choose your parents very carefully. Some of you are going to get that on the way home. You're going to laugh and think it's very funny then. But it was only, and that was to emphasize that God chose the priests of the nation. No man appointed himself to it. It was God's choice, and God doesn't make mistakes, and God chooses who's going to be the priest. And so you had to be born into the tribe of Levi. But he said, "Don't count them. For the Lord said this to Moses, 'Do not include the tribe of Levi in the registration. Do not count them with the rest of the Israelites. Put the Levites in charge of the tabernacle of the covenant, along with all of its furnishings and all of its equipment.'" This tells us something very important about this tribe of Levi, these priests that were there. They were to dedicate themselves completely and totally to the worship of the Lord. Now that meant that that term, the worship of the Lord, meant so much more than what normally we think of worship. When we think of worship, we think of songs and singing and raising our hands and worshiping God, and that's kind of our understanding of worship. But what God is telling us is that worship is an occupation. It's a way of life. It's who you are. It's what you do. It's your personality. It's your character. It's everything put together is what it meant to worship the Lord. And these Levites, that's what they were to focus on and keep their focus on at all times, was providing for the people to worship God. In Numbers 1:53 it says, "But the Levites will camp around the tabernacle of the covenant to protect the community of Israel from the Lord's anger." I kind of flew over that. I want to read that again. "But the Levites will camp around the tabernacle of the covenant to protect the community of Israel from the Lord's anger." The Levites are responsible to stand guard around the tabernacle. Listen to what God is saying there. The Levites were to be the men of the tribe that protected, stood between God and the people and interceded for them. When they sinned, they were to be there to offer the sacrifices so that the wrath of God would not break out against them. When they blew it, they were the ones that stood between God and the people and said, "Lord, don't take revenge upon them. Don't execute your judgment, which they deserve. But offer up this sacrifice, Lord, as a sacrifice for their sins so that they will not be destroyed by the holiness of God." They were the protectors of the nation of Israel. I think that's an awesome thing to understand, that they were to be the protectors of the nation of Israel. Now, we're going to make some parallels between the New Testament and the Old Testament here, because in the New Testament, the Bible says that believers, every single believer is a priest unto the Lord. That was the thing that Jesus opened up. No longer do you have to be born of a Levite, mother and father, in order to be a priest. The book of Hebrews says, "You are a nation of kings and priests unto me." We have all entered into that priesthood because of Jesus Christ. Now I want you to think about what that means for you and I this morning. If the role of the priest in the Old Testament was to stand between the nation of Israel and the God that they served and make sure that they were covered and protected, what does that mean about you and I today and the rest of the world? We have an obligation. We have a command of God to be the protectors of the people that we are surrounded by. And I believe that we're to be the protectors not only of the godly, but the ungodly. It has all kinds of evangelistic implications to us. You know, some people have a problem with a God who sends people to hell. Some people have a problem with the reality of hell. I have a problem with Christians who won't do anything about people that are going to hell. That's where the real problem lies, not in a God who has prepared a place for those who rebel against them, but with a church that will not do anything to lead people into the safety and to protect them from the fate that awaits every single one of us if we don't turn to Jesus Christ. That is the greater responsibility. And that's something that the world doesn't get today. I understand that. I know that. But that is the implication for every follower of Jesus Christ this morning. We are to stand in the gap. In the book of Ezekiel, there's a story about the watchman. How many of you know that story about the watchman on the wall in the book of Ezekiel? God said, "I've appointed the watchman on the wall to watch for the evil man that's coming. And if he warns them and says the evil man is coming and they don't do anything and they're destroyed, the watchman is free. He's done his job. He's done what's required of him. But if he sees the evil thing coming and he does nothing about it, then I am going to require from the watchman his soul, his body, his life in return for those that he gave up by not warning them." See, this being a Christian is not for the weak-willed. I say this a lot, but people who say that Christianity is for weak-willed people don't get it at all. They don't understand what the Bible requires of somebody that follows Jesus Christ. We're to be the protectors of those people that are there. And then he said, then he goes and he designates these places of refuge. It says, while Israel was camped beside the Jordan on the plains of Moab across from Jericho, the Lord said to Moses, command the people of Israel to give the Levites from their property certain towns to live in along with surrounding pasture lands. They were an agrarian society. They farmed for survival. They didn't farm for hobbies. They farmed because if they didn't farm, they wouldn't eat and they wouldn't live. And the Levites needed a place of their own to call home, and they, as they did their jobs and their duties in the tabernacle and worship. And so God said, you're to set aside towns and cities for the Levites to pasture, to have a place so they can grow crops and survive and, you know, make a living for themselves. But it says, six of the towns that you give to the Levites will be cities of refuge, where a person who has accidentally killed someone can flee for safety. In addition, give them 42 other towns. Now, this idea of this city of refuge was to be a place that people that accidentally killed someone. That was the specific meaning behind it. Someone that found themselves in desperate circumstances, in straits that they couldn't do anything about, there was a place where they could go if they could make it to that city. Say there was a terrible ox cart accident, and somebody is killed in it, or somebody is chopping wood and the axe head flies off and strikes them and kills them. Even if it's accidental, there was the blood of the avenger that kicked in. If you kill my brother, I have a duty to kill you because you took my brother's life. Now, there's a problem with that. First of all, it's not always just. And second of all, that kind of attitude just perpetuates death and destruction and murder on and on and on. God wanted to put an end to that, and so he put in these places called cities of refuge so that people could go to them and find justice, so that they could find peace, so that they could find reconciliation. If they could make it to that city of refuge, they would have a place where they would be safe, where they would find protection, where they would find deliverance, where they would find justice for their lives. Now, do you know where I'm going with this? The Church of Jesus Christ is called to be the city of refuge. We're not here by accident this morning. We've been in this building 15 years. We've been a church for more than that, probably another 15 or 20 years. And we've been around for a long time, but we're not here by accident. We are here to be a place of refuge for the people and the people in this city that find themselves in difficult straits. We've begun doing that more and more as we work with community organizations to reach out and to touch people and rescue them from the places that they find. And we are called to do that as people of God. That is our job. That is our calling as the Church of Jesus Christ. This beautiful building that we have, it's not meant to be a club. It's not meant to be a place where only the initiated can come in. It's to be a place for those that are desperate, for those that are facing life-changing and life-challenging situations to come and find acceptance and love and forgiveness and justice and peace and contentment, a place that's safe from the rest of the world, a place that's different from the rest of the world. We think differently, we act differently than the rest of the world does. We love them because of who they are, not because of what they do, but because of who they are. They're made in the image of God. In Matthew chapter 25, there's a piece of scripture, and it's Judgment Day. And God has gathered all of the nations around Him, and He separates them as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. When they would take their flocks out to pasture, they would let the sheep and the goats just mingle together. But when they came in for the night, they would come in and they would separate the sheep from the goats when they're getting ready to take them to market. It's the final day for some of those animals that are there. And the shepherd would say, sheep to the left, goats to the right. And they would all listen and obey. No, I don't know. I'm not a farmer, but I doubt they listened and obeyed. I'll let that one go. It says, then the king will say to those on his right, come, you who are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the creation of the world. For I was hungry and you fed me. I was thirsty and you gave me a drink. I was a stranger and you invited me into your home. I was naked and you gave me clothing. I was sick and you cared for me. I was in prison and you visited me. Now, this presented a problem to the sheep that were on the right. They didn't get it. They thought, wait a minute. What are you talking about? You're the king. You have no need of me to rescue you. You're the king. You're the one that's in charge. You've got all of the resources of the kingdom. How in the world could I have ever done that for you? And it says then in verses 34, 37, it says, then the righteous ones will reply, Lord, when did we ever see you hungry and feed you? Or thirsty and give you something to drink? Or a stranger and show you hospitality? Or naked and give you clothing? When did we ever see you sick or in prison and visit you? And the king replies, and he says, I tell you the truth, when you did it to one of the least of these, my brothers and sisters, you were doing it for me. You know, there's something tremendous in this piece of scripture that we need to grab a hold of today. We worship God in this place, and God, I believe, is pleased with our worship. We give of our offerings, and I believe that God is pleased when we give in our offerings. We teach and preach here, and I believe God is pleased when we rightly divide the word of truth. We do all of these things, but none of that really, really buys us anything. It doesn't do anything for us unless we're willing to live that out and to love those around us and to reach out and to touch the world that is around us. There's a lot of repugnant things going on in our world around us today. Sometimes I despair when I see the direction that this nation is going, and I think of how far away from God we're moving. It doesn't seem like we're moving in a godly direction. It seems like we're moving in an ungodly direction. And yet we're still called to love this world and those that are in it and those that are part of God's plan of salvation, which is all people. We're still called to be people that reach out and touch people. We're to be that city of refuge. We are to be that place where the rest of the world can run to when they have times of difficulty, when they have trials and difficulties and struggles. They need to have a place that they know that they can run to. Some of them don't know they need it yet. And that means that we need to build up relationships and put ourselves in their place, so that when the time comes when they do face a crisis, that they will have an open door to come and to be part of who we are and what we are. We need to prepare to be that place, that city of refuge. You know, that can be kind of messy sometimes. That can be kind of odd sometimes. You know, babies aren't exactly the most hygienic thing to have in your house. They get sick all the time, right, Elliot? Yeah, they or Pierce. I called you Elliot. I'll call you missionary. How's that? babies make messes. I got to change my grandson's diaper, by the way. Did I tell you that? No, nothing happened. Nothing's wrong. He was happy with it. I did a great job, if I say so myself. Babies make messes, but you don't judge a baby on the mess that they make. You base your love on the love of that child, on the potential that he has in his life, what he's going to be. You have dreams and aspirations of what that child is going to be. You love them for who they are right at that time. You know, when a baby messes his diaper, you don't punish him for it. You change his diaper. You give him what he needs at that moment in time. Now, if you're 16-year-old, never mind. But you see where I'm going with this, right? You see, in our membership class, I talk about the fact that if you're looking to be treated fair in this church, you're in the wrong church, because we don't treat everybody the same way. We treat you based on your maturity level and how much you know about Jesus Christ. People come in here, they don't know anything about God. I'm not going to expect them to be godly, because they can't be. We're to be cities of refuge. We're to be places where people can run in times of crisis to find justice and peace and comfort. Now, there's one other thing that I want to leave you with this morning. Maybe you're here this morning and you're wondering what all this talk about comfort and refuge and all of that kind of means. Because Jesus is the ultimate refuge in times of trouble. As a matter of fact, in Matthew 11:28, Jesus cries out and he says, come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Oh, man. I don't know how many of you here this morning need rest. Some of you that have been working in this place for the last 2 weeks, you need a little rest. You've been pouring your heart and your soul into that. Maybe your job is just a burden to you instead of a joy. Maybe your family is going through some difficult times and you just wish that you could have some rest. Maybe finances are coming in and they're not where they should be and you need some rest. Maybe you're just sick and tired of being sick and tired and you need some rest. Maybe you need a healing in your body. You've been fighting this physical thing for a long time and you just need your rest. I want you to know Jesus says, "Come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest." If you need that this morning, we're going to make some time for you just to come to this altar and for us to pray for you and to say, "God, give them rest this morning. Touch their hearts, touch their lives, touch their souls." I want you to stand with me right now. The worship team is coming back. But maybe you need some rest this morning. Maybe you need that city of refuge that's right here, right now, in the person of Jesus Christ to come into your life and to come into your heart and to give you that rest that you need. If you need rest this morning, I want to see you at this altar. We're not going to do anything weird to you or anything like that. I'm just going to come and lay a hand on you, pray for you, and say, "God, give them rest this morning. Give them your peace. Give them your grace. Give them your mercy." If that's what you need, I want you to come right now as the worship team sings. No matter what that need is, you come and let Jesus give you rest.